Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Today is a remembrance day, a day to look back and reflect on the tragedy that took place in the United States on September 11th. And as many of you, I spent a portion of the day watching documentaries and footage and updated information. And one of the specials that really caught my attention is from our first guest, Brad Meltzer, from Lost History TV. The program today, America's 9/11 Flag, Rise from the Ashes, was a very powerful documentary and an amazing little story. And Brad has agreed to come on with us for the first half an hour here. We'll open up phone lines in the second half an hour for your memories of 9/11. What did it mean to you then and now? And we'll do that a little later on. Then Mark Anthony will join us for the last part of tonight's show, the last 3 hours, where we will discuss 9/11, the ramifications of it in our world and through grief and suffering. We'll discuss that this evening on the show. Brad Meltzer joining us right now on the show is a number one New York Times bestselling author. His two nonfiction books, Heroes for My Son and Heroes for My Daughter, were New York Times bestsellers as well. And he's won the prestigious Eisner Award for his comic book work, Justice League of America. Brad is also the host of History Channel TV shows Brad Meltzer's Decoded and Brad Meltzer's Lost History, which brings us to tonight's topic. He lives in Florida with his wife and their three children. Brad, welcome back to Coast AM.
Good to hear your voice, my friend.
This is a very powerful show that you did today, this documentary that's been running, America's 9/11 Flag, Rise from the Ashes. So many of us are familiar with that iconic photograph of the three firefighters raising the flag over the devastation that took place at Ground Zero. You did an episode of this.
Yeah, right? We all know that one, right?
Right. And you did an episode that focused on that flag and its history and story about 2 years ago on your show. Is that right?
Yeah, and what happened was I went to the History Channel almost 3 years ago, and I said to them, listen, I want to do a TV show where we go out, I tell the story of missing American artifacts that have been stolen from museums, stolen from private collections, and then we'll have Americans help us. We'll offer a reward, like the modern-day wanted poster, and if anyone's seen it, then they'll bring it in. And it's, you know, the History Channel, head of the History Channel looked at me, and he said, is this going to work? Are you going to find anything? And I said to him, we're going to find something, but I promise you, you have no idea what we're going to find, because America is going to always surprise us. So as you mentioned, 2 years ago, almost, we told the story of the famous flag that the firefighters raised at Ground Zero. And at the end of the episode, I came on and said, America, we need your help. Please, if you've seen the flag, come tell us where it is. I said, we'll give you a $10,000 reward if you do. And what no one knew, and I had to keep secret for almost 2 years now, is that 4 days after that first show aired, a former Marine walks into the fire station in Washington State, in Everett, Washington, and he says, I saw the show Lost History. I want to turn this in. It's the flag from 9/11. And we nearly fell over when that happened.
We need to take a quick break. When we return, we'll talk with Brad about this amazing find and how are we able to quantify and qualify that this flag, this piece of American history that was turned in anonymously in the state of Washington, would actually be the flag that had appeared 15 years earlier, 13 years earlier, actually, from when he turned it on, in over the devastating site in New York City. We'll discuss that and more. Stay tuned. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Imagine that. You put together a program discussing the missing icon from 911, the flag that so many of us recognize from every media source, photographs, videos, TV programs, newspapers. It's one of the few glimmering, shining rays of hope that appeared during that devastating time. That flag manages to vanish. And you do a program about this, Brad, 4 days after it airs. Somebody turns it in. When you get word of that, I mean, are you immediately skeptical or are you pretty keyed up thinking this worked, this really worked?
Oh, I was completely skeptical. I was like, there's no way that everything we planned. I'm like, I went into the History Channel, said, I have an idea. We're going to tell this story and people are going to bring it back. 4 days later, someone brings it back. I'm like, nothing in life is that easy. And I just don't believe it works like that. I, of course, thought it was a fake. And, you know, I thought someone wanted the $10,000 reward. And the other part is, and this is just protective, but if I believed it was real immediately, then I felt the moment they told me it's fake, it was going to be heartbreaking. So I kind of just, you know, almost steeled myself for it. And I think everyone who worked on it was doing exactly that. And what quickly happened is we started trying to authenticate it. And, you know, God bless the folks in Everett, Washington, the investigators there opened their own investigation. We opened up a parallel investigation with the History Channel. We obviously had access to the things that they had, and we also had extra stuff because we had the people who the flag originally belonged to, and those were going to be the best eyewitnesses for it. They knew this exact flag and knew markings that might have been on it.
Brad, from the moment it was turned in, can I ask real quick, from the moment it was turned in, how long until you and the History Channel were alerted to this?
You know, I never actually went back and looked, but I feel like I got the call. I mean, it was immediately. I mean, we were immediately told because the guy came in and said, I saw this on Lost History. And so they immediately called us and said, hey, this happened. But I, you know, it might have been the next day. It might have been a couple days later. I just don't even remember. But it was quick as could be because I remember at the moment it aired, suddenly getting the call and going, you must be joking. I mean, it felt like it was just overnight. But I you know, obviously it was 2 years ago, so I can't remember the exact day. But when it happened, you know, you have to authenticate this. It takes a whole process. And you know, you do forensic evidence, you do photographic evidence, you do eyewitness testimony of people who might have known this particular flag. But what was amazing to me is that the forensic part is actually the easy part. Because as our expert explained to me, and he's the leader in 9/11 dust and ground zero dust, and he said to me, Brad, he said, ground zero dust is like a fingerprint. And what he explained was, is that it's not just made up of parts of buildings, but it's made up of jet fuel, and it's made up of human remains. So he said to me, if you want to recreate 9/11 ground zero dust, you got to recreate 9/11.
Yeah, that's powerful. When they were doing that, and they were looking at the microscopic data that they were able to collect from the flag, and you have this expert who literally wrote the book on this kind of dust composite and what it could mean when they're looking at this flag. One thing that did strike me, and I wonder what, you know, what your thoughts were on this, you know, he talked about how easily it could be contaminated and that they might have lost some of the DNA from the original firefighters and so on that had touched the flag and brought the flag up. It had been turned into a fire department, a fire station, where they're constantly dealing with objects that are burning, locations that are burning. I'm sure that there is, you know, contaminants around them at all times, and even in the firehouse. Was there any concern that any part of the debris that, you know, that they found could be just contaminant from where it was dropped off to begin with? And how did they differentiate between it being regular human residue from being handled for the last 15 years and human remains?
I mean, that's in the microscope. He can see it. You can see what, you know, there's a difference between the flick of your, you know, a piece of your skin and, you know, a human body parts that are, you know, on that microscopic level are made up of different things. And you can even see it on the show itself as he's looking at it. And that was what was kind of caught me off guard is that it's the mixture. It's, you know, it's almost like this cauldron that happens and it all gets mixed together. So, you know, you can find in a fire station, okay, maybe even on the worst day, and I don't even think you would on that in a place like that, but maybe you can find, you know, some God forbid awful thing that happened from a body, but you're not also getting jet fuel and you're not also getting the fiberglass that's in there. You're not also getting the kind of special steel that only existed in the Twin Towers because they were so made of, you know, a certain kind of metal. And, you know, even he was explaining to me,
Brad,
in the air.
Yep. Okay, there we go. I'm sorry, we lost you there for a second. Your audio dropped out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, that's odd. I said, you know, one of the things that he was showing me when we were there is that it's also made of, the building itself has a certain kind of metal in it and even has the desks and that are on some of those floors that are standard desks, a certain kind of formica, a certain kind of he had, you'll never see this on the air because it was just too long of an explanation, but as he was explaining it to me, you can find things that they knew were just in this building all mixed together, and that's a one of a kind. And he said to me, he's a fingerprint expert as well, and he's like, this is better than a fingerprint because you can actually have fingerprints that'll be pretty close to someone else. He's like, there's nothing else like this. There's no other time where these kinds of, human remains and jet fuel and these particular things that are in this particular building and that welded at such a level of heat that created another kind of level of matter that there's nothing else like it. He's like, and I think he says this on the air, on the show, but he says, I would stake my house on it. He's like, right. Can I testify? I never say that.
He delivers this information to you after 13 years of this flag being missing and all of the corroborating evidence pointing to the fact that you're 99% sure this is the flag that hung there. This gentleman that turned it in, I thought it was very classy of you how you came out and just said, hey, whatever the story is, thank you for doing the right thing. Thank you for bringing it back and getting this in the right hands. Is there any legal ramifications to this guy for taking the flag at that time? Is there any reason he should be in hiding or fearful for his name being attached to the story?
Let's talk about this part because this isn't in the episode. And, there are people on the episode you can see who are like, I doubt his story and I don't know if it's true. And they're, who say, he brought it back because he might have taken it or he knew someone who took it. And here's his story, which we actually don't get into again because it's just the hour-long special we have. But he gave, he never gave his last name. He just gave his first name as Brian. And he, according to his story, what he told the firefighter is that he got the flag from someone who got it from someone who was a widow who lost someone in 9/11 and that someone gave her the flag. And what's amazing to me is that people, and you can say whatever you want, but here's the thing. Here's why I believe this guy and why I don't think there are legal ramifications is that when the flag was taken, as far as we can establish on the timeline, it was taken the day of 9/11. It's gone by 11 o'clock that night. And when it's taken, that is not the most famous flag. It's just a flag. It doesn't become famous until 2 days later when the picture runs across the globe. Then it's the most famous flag of the 21st century. But at that moment it's taken, you can imagine, all these people are dead and you're at 9/11 and your friend lost someone. And so you're like, I'm going to take this to honor this widow who needs it. And I don't blame anybody for doing that. I don't care if someone raises a flag. Show respect, but there's no way I can't. And that's why I thanked him on the air. I was like, whether you thought someone took it for a bad reason, whether you even took it for a bad reason, he's still at the end of the day, you're doing the right thing. And here's the key part. He never took the reward money. Never. He could have taken it now. He didn't want the reward money. And to me, that says more about his character than anything else.
Right. And I understood when they said during the episode, the idea that he got the flag from a friend who got it from a friend from the widow, it did sound a little strange to have that kind of, protocol for it to pass through. If you're walking through and you're a part of this and you see this flag kind of sticking out of nowhere. And as you said, it hadn't become this iconic scene from 9/11 yet. And you just saw it and taking it down. That wouldn't have been a crime. And I think anybody would have done something like that too. This is an important piece and not realizing just how important. Because you would think too, all right, so if they got that, how would he know? How would Brian know that this is the exact flag that was photographed in that picture? How would he know unless he had been more involved in it than that? Because if it was just taken off as they speculated, maybe put over one of the firefighters or somebody that had gone down, and then that flag was turned over to the widow at some point, there would have been no correlation with it being that flag that would have been passed on to him, I would think.
Yeah, he says, he according to him, he didn't see, he knew she had it, but he didn't recognize it until he saw it on Lost History. And then that was it. The funny part was, is the whole idea for Lost History came from the National Archives, a visit that I played there. And there was one of the guys there at the National Archives said to me that they hunt for all these items that are stolen. They're JFK's tracking maps from, I think it was the Bay of Pigs, were missing. And when JFK's secretary passed away, her family went to her house, cleaned out the attic, and guess what was there?
Right.
It wasn't that she stole it. What happened was, it wasn't famous then. They didn't know that this was going to be in a museum one day or what this big role was going to play in history. And JFK wrote on it, said apparently, like, get him out of here. I don't need him anymore. So she took him home. It was not like we have today where NARA and the National Archives takes every single paper like that.
Right.
And so she just took it and put it there. And I said to them, how do you get this stuff back? And they explained to me, we go to antique shows and we show people pictures, and we go to gun shows and show people pictures. And every once in a while, someone just goes, you know what? I saw that. I saw that somewhere. And that's how we always get it back. So I was always like, well, if we just do this on a national level, someone's going to see something somewhere. And that to me is why it always works out, because that's exactly what happens. It sounds crazy and it's a 1 in a million shot, but you know what? You got millions of people watching, so the 1 in a million shot is actually on your side.
Right. And again, I applaud you on being so concise with this story and sticking with it and keeping it quiet until now, because it was such a powerful impact to see the way this entire thing played out. And what really caught me off guard was that emotion that hit you when you realized what it was, that this was no longer a question of, could it possibly be, or is this just a hoax that we're, hoping for? When it hit you, man, the emotion you could see on your face, it choked me up watching the special. It was a beautifully done show. Now, it's really exciting because not only did you find this piece of lost history, but you were able to present it to the museum.
Yeah, that was one of the craziest moments. And the funny part was, just to speak to your first part, is I knew what the solution was when they're recording me, but the thing that caught me and that got to me is I actually was meeting with Nick Petrenko. He was showing me on his slides the proof, and I was still doubting everything
right
until we were sitting there. And it wasn't until I saw those clips for myself that I finally believed the guy, because I was like, you know what, you can tell me whatever you want, you can show me whatever tests you want, you can show me microscopic stuff, but when you look at those clips and you see that they don't match, that's a detail nobody can make up. It's one of those ones where we just got lucky. If it was just a flag that was returned, we don't get it. And what you're catching there is me, really, it's dawning on me, oh my gosh, I actually believe it now. And that's what caught me off guard. But also, as you said, on last Thursday, I got to be there to help unveil that at the 9/11 Museum. And I walked into the museum, and there's the president of the museum, the head of the History Channel is there, the great investigators from Washington State are there. And I walk over to the flag because I want to see the flag. And then I see on this plaque, and I'm reading, and I see, thanks to, and it says Brad Meltzer's lost history. And it's in the case. And, to be very clear, no one did this for any television show or anything else. We didn't have the show. Lost History was canceled and off the air. What everyone was working for was just the mission. We didn't even know we were going to get it televised again. We had to actually like work that part backwards because we were like, oh my gosh, it actually worked. But for a year and a half, people were just still working at it for no other reason than, we can find maybe George Washington's teeth, which actually have been stolen. We can find, James Bond's Aston Martin, which has been stolen as well, one of the Aston Martin cars. But those are just objects. And yes, I'd love to find them. But we all knew that if we find this, you actually can potentially bring closure to.
Brad.
Yes,
all
sir.
Right. Oh, there you are. Okay. I'm sorry. Your audio keeps dipping out. You said it brings closure, and then we lost you again.
Yeah, no, it brings. And I said that was the mission, is that it can bring closure to these families who need it.
And the impact that it had on the family. I mean, this flag was on somebody's yacht, and they realized it at that time, never wanted it back. I mean, you have to give credit all the way through this line. Nobody has wanted it for any kind of personal gain. They just want it recognized and protected. And I think that's been that's another thread of this entire story that was so powerful. Brad, I know you've got to get going. I want to promote your books because I'll tell you, your publisher sent me two of your children's books, and I had them sitting out today, and my kids went through them and absolutely loved them. Can you hang with us for just a few more minutes so we can promote that when we come back from the break?
Sure, of course.
I'd love to talk to you about that. I want to make sure we can. Go check out the show for yourself, folks. You have to see. I'm sure you can find it on History Channel right now. It's America's 9/11 flag, Rise from the Ashes. We'll be back with one more segment with Brad Meltzer right after this. Thank you again for spending your evening here with me on Coast to Coast AM. Phone lines are open. We'd like to talk to you. What are your memories of today? What did it mean to you then and now 15 years later? You feel that the impact is still as deep? And have we divided more as a country, or do you believe that we came together more? I'd like to hear your thoughts and insights on that. Before we do that, we still have Brad Meltzer with us for just a few moments. He is the host of America's 9/11 Flag Rise from the Ashes, a special History Channel program aired tonight. I'm sure you can find it in replay, and I highly recommend watching this because it tells a unique part of the story and legend. But you've also got a great new books series out. I have a seven-year-old son and a nine-year-old daughter, and I had two of your books out, The Ordinary People, Change the World. I have the I Am Jane Goodall and I Am George Washington books out, Brad. And my kids picked them up on their own because of the great artwork and started thumbing through them and really loved them. I mean, they were involved in these, liked them, and wanted to know if there were any more books like this.
No, I appreciate you clearly have genius kids. but all kidding aside, listen, I wrote these for my own kids, and I was tired of my own kids looking at reality TV show stars and big mouth athletes and thinking that that's a hero. And I tell my kids all the time, that's being famous. And being famous is very different than being a hero. And so I started with I Am Amelia Earhart and I Am Abraham Lincoln. And the way we started them is, you know, if I tell my daughter that Amelia Earhart flew across the Atlantic Ocean, my daughter says, big deal, Dad, everyone flies across the Atlantic. But if I tell her that when she was 7 years old, and there's a true story, when Amelia Earhart was 7 years old, she built a homemade roller coaster in her backyard. And she took a wooden crate and put roller skating wheels on the bottom and shoved it to the roof of her tool shed and came flying down from the roof and crashed and got up and said, that's amazing, or whatever she screamed in, you know, that moment. Now my daughter's captivated because Amelia Earhart is just like her. She's bold and she's daring and she's fun. And so we then did, after I Am Abraham Lincoln and Amelia Earhart, we did I Am Rosa Parks, I Am Jackie Robinson, I Am Albert Einstein. We did I Am Lucille Ball because I was tired of my daughter looking at reality TV show stars, beyond the reality TV stars, looking at entertainment people who were just famous for being thin and pretty. I wanted my daughter to have someone who is an entertainment hero who is different. And that's what Lucy stands for, is that it's not just okay to be different. It's fantastic to be different. That's what Lucille Ball is there for. She is the opposite of every reality star. And then we even did I Am Helen Keller, where we put real Braille into the books. So you close your eyes and say, feel these dots. My name is Helen. What's your name? And your kids can feel the real Braille. And we now have, after Dr. King, we also did the ones that came out this week. As you said, I Am Jane Goodall, and most important, especially for 9/11, when I think about it, is I Am George Washington, because that book is about leadership, and it's about, I want my daughter to know how to be a leader. I want my sons to know how to be leaders. And leadership is not about being in charge. It's about taking care of those in your charge. And, you know, we look today, my kids look at the TVs and they see politicians. And we all know politicians, I tell them, are not leaders. A politician is very different than a leader. And I think that George Washington in this book represents what a leader is and not what a politician is. And that's what the whole book really centers around.
And you made it so easy to assimilate and fun to look at. And it was engaging, which is totally rare. I've brought other child historical books home, and, you know, they have a great cover and you look inside and it's just too deeply entrenched with information that overloads, and they don't enjoy it, don't like it. This was done so well that you've got a new fan in the Schrader family, I can tell you. My children and my granddaughter will be getting a set of these books because they are fantastically written, and it's such a great opportunity to share with them something that can educate them and entertain them at the same time, instead of just kind of glossing over it in school, which, you know, most people are it seems just making their way through it and, you know, slogging through. This is something I think is going to stick with them more because it's a lot more fun to educate yourself this way.
Said, like our artist, Chris Eliopoulos, you know, he has a style that's a little bit like Charlie Brown meets Calvin and Hobbes. And
right.
That's why your kids take to it. And then what we do, what I do is I say, we're going to not just show you when they're famous, we'll show you when they're kids. So you see George Washington as a boy. And you see that he was, you know what, he wasn't some amazing student. He was a terrible speller. My kids are all terrible spellers. Now he's just like them. He actually was not some great athlete. He was like, he liked to swim, he liked to fish, but he loved to dance. And now, you know, my daughter loves to dance. She's like, he's not some dead guy on a dollar bill anymore. They see him as a kid, and now they can relate to him. And to me, the most important part is the moment in I Am George Washington. His most heroic act happens after we win the Revolutionary War. And it's the moment where he can be the king of America. He's so popular that we make him the king. And in that moment, King George of England says, what's George Washington going to do? And they say, well, he's going to go back to his farm. And King George says, if he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. And that's exactly what George Washington does, and he does it again after his second term. He doesn't seize power and make himself the center of it. His most heroic act is that he says, you know what, I'm done. I don't need the power. I'm going to have faith in this country and faith in us as a people. And I want my kids to learn that, because look at the politicians we have today. It's a joke. If we offered them power, you really think they'd say, no, I don't want it. They would grab it in a heartbeat. And I need my kids to see what a real hero is. And what I love about these books is it's not about, you know, saying here's I Am Jane Goodall or I Am George Washington, but it's that what you just said is that people are using it. And my goal is to help you build a library of real heroes for your kids and your grandkids and your nieces and your nephews, and remind them that real heroes exist in this world.
Well, thank you, Brad. We appreciate that. We appreciate the work that you've done on the specials and on the new books. And again, I highly recommend them to our listeners around the world that are tuning in right now. We have to take another break. When we come back, phone lines are open. We'll take your calls and discuss your thoughts on 9/11 here on the 15th anniversary on Coast to Coast AM. We're back live on Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, this evening in remembrance of all of those that perished on 9/11. This is the 15th anniversary. We'll take your calls now. If you have thoughts, questions, conversation you'd like to share, we'll do that. At the top of next hour, Mark Anthony will join me. What are the psychic ramifications of 9/11? What does it do, and how does it affect our world when a tragedy of this magnitude takes place? Is this ripple effect felt through all time and space? We'll discuss that and more for the remainder of the show. But right now, let's go to the phones. Wild card, line one, Charles in Baltimore. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Yes, first of all, thank Brad for me, please, for putting some of that stuff in Braille. I remember him mentioning that. And, you know, what can I say? I'm a lifelong Braille user. And, well, what can you say? But thank you. That is so nice of him to do that. And I do have a comment on the topic, if you don't mind, please.
Please.
Okay, yes. Well, I've seen on the YouTube where some people say that this was a staged event, that we're really not fighting for America. The multinational corporations got a hold of us. And, you know, it's been playing for a long, long time. And no, we're not safe. And those people who did it, they got us right where they want us, because hopefully it'll never happen again, but you never know. We're just not safe anymore. You know, we don't have freedom to travel. Not really, because it's, you know, we're all inconvenienced at the airport because of what the terrorists did. And I wonder really how much is the world really on our side. Because I don't remember hearing, I know some companies responded and said they were sorry what happened to us. But I also heard, too, that a lot of the Arab countries in the Middle East, they were dancing and celebrating. They were probably doing that over there in Iran and places like that. So what do you think?
You know, to me, I've heard both sides of the tale. I've heard people that believe that that it was corporations and our own political motivations that created 9/11 and that it was an internal attack. And I've heard people that I believe and trust in on the other side that say, no, this was a terroristic attack that was done from outside our country. And both have got compelling points, and both have some frightening realizations to them. And it's hard to give a definitive answer. I mean, there's too much at stake, in my opinion, to say definitively, I believe this way or that. I believe that it's probably a mixture of both, and I believe that there's an ugly underbelly to what took place in this world. You know, but you have to ask, have we ever really been safe? I mean, from Pearl Harbor on, we showed that we were vulnerable. We've always been vulnerable. And sometimes I think when you're the biggest kid on the block, and in the eyes of sometimes the rest of the world, the bully, they're all looking for the chance to pants you and make you look like a fool and embarrass you or show just how vulnerable you are. Do I think we'll ever be truly safe? No. And for God's sake, I hope we continue to feel that way, in the sense that we don't let down our guard again because we think we're number one. We're the big cheese. I think we need to be more aware. And I'm not inconvenienced at all at the airport. I continue to travel. I traveled within weeks of 9/11 and have never stopped. And I'm not going to stop because of what happened. When it's our time, it's our time. I mean, Charles, when it's our time to wrap up, it's going to go. Whether I'm choking on a McNugget or, you know, flying into a building, that's our lot, and that's what will happen. So I can't let them win. I can't lose by just doing and living life. And the best way we can succeed, and the best way we can show the rest of the world who we really are, is just to continue to pick ourselves up, brush off the dust, and continue to move ahead and do what we do and do it the best that we possibly can while showing compassion for the rest of the world. And that's what I think we really need to take away. But thank you for calling in, Charles. Let's go wild card line two, Keith in Sagamore, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yeah, I hope Brad heard that, actually. That's actually a town from a couple of his books. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to thank Brad for, you know, for helping find that flag, and also he does such excellent work. His research is so deep when he writes and when he does his TV shows. I just have to say that, you know, as far as the truther movement about the towers and all that, I remember just communicating with some people. A couple of them turned out to be truthers, and I had made an offhand comment, and within 6 months it was all over the truthers, and that had to be how the towers were brought down. And that was just suggesting a couple of briefcases full of thermite. And I don't know, I just think the truther movement was completely unhinged. But I just have to say, you're right, we're never going to be totally safe. You know, I mean, let's face it, it's better to have dangerous liberty than safe and protected tyranny.
Right. I agree with you. Thank you very much for calling in, Keith. And as far as the truther movement goes, you know, I'm not opposed to people trying to understand and get to the truth. I also think that, like you said, sometimes people take it to extraordinary lengths and will see conspiracies in everything. And I'm not saying that this wasn't a conspiracy. I'm not saying that there wasn't underhanded dealings going on. But what I'm saying is sometimes I think we get into the rabbit hole in the darkness, and people start taking too much of what they read online, which oftentimes are opinions or blusterings of one person who claims to be in the know, and we take their word for, you know, gospel, and that's where it goes. And that, I think, is even more frightening, because we don't know who's posting half of the stuff. We don't know who these quote-unquote experts always are that appear and reference it. And news has a problem with taking bits and pieces they get from alternate sources and quoting it as truth without knowing if in fact they're even getting the right information or getting it from a legible source, a logical source. Let's go wild card line three. Sharon, Crane, Missouri, you're on the air with Coast to Coast.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm not going to talk about whether there's a conspiracy or not.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk about what I felt on that day. I was scheduled to go into a meeting in a state building up in Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting in the cafeteria waiting. They had the television on to the morning news like they usually did. And I saw the first plane go in. And I thought, oh my God, what is that plane? That plane that big, what is it doing in that part of the city? And when the second one hit, I thought, okay, we're being attacked. So I went home. I had a small flag that I'd had from the 4th of July. I taped it in my window. I called my son, who was in the Coast Guard, and I said, Michael, I said, you hear what's happening? He said, yeah, Mom. And I said, you know what this means? And he said, yeah, I know what it means. He said, we're being attacked. I talked to him for a little while, told him I loved him very much and stay safe. And my sister called me in Houston, Texas, and she was crying. I had my television on, and I sat there for an hour with my sister, and I just listened as she cried. And I watched the news coverage, and I watched all of the papers flying out of the building. And then I watched these things that looked like falling flowers from a tree, starting to fall from the tops of the building and from the windows. And I thought, my God, those are people. Those are people. And I sat there, and I was so stunned, and I was so heartbroken for those people and their families. In the city of New York and my country. And I have never gotten over that feeling. And I want, and if anybody wants to do anything to honor those people's memory, start caring about your country. Start taking your responsibilities to your country more seriously. Start learning about your country's government. Get up off your dead, excuse my language, asses, and get out there and learn about the people that are trying to gain office to run this country, and vote. Make your opinion known. Get involved in your community. And for God's sakes, if I ever hear another person say, if you're too stupid to get off of jury duty, then you're too stupid to walk. So help me, I'm going to punch him in the nose. Start caring about this country. There are people buried all over the world who died so that we can do what we do every single day without a thought. Start being a real American. That's all I've got to say.
Well, Sharon, you said it all, and that was beautifully and eloquently stated. And there is a time, you know, we have to look at in our lives how we act and how we perceive ourselves to be. And we need to start acting with the decorum that we want the rest of the world to see us as, instead of bumbling buffoons and blathering morons and making light of our world. We need to start being seen as a force of good, as a force of people that are in control of our cities, our states, our government. And we need to come together, and that needs to start within. That needs to start from our level, individually. You need to start taking responsibility for your actions and the actions of your family. We need to take that back so that we can present a united front and become a great country again. And it's not going to come from a billionaire businessman. He's not going to make the country good again. It's not going to come from a career politician. It's going to come from us. We need to make that step up. We need to stop doing things to embarrass ourselves and our country. The country will do that, and politicians will do that on their own, but we as a people can still put on a good light and a good face and show what we're really like. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Mark Anthony will join us. We have a few more callers we'll take right after the top of the hour break. Mark Anthony will be here to discuss the rest. That's what we have on tap tonight. I'm Dave Schrader. This is Coast to Coast AM.